welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. One thing I've noticed in this fog of war is that voices that carry truth act as a bell for awakening those that are destined to awaken. You can hear the clarity and strength in them, and they give us hope and courage and carry the future of humanity. On the other side of truth and humanity is the globalist, using the ideas of Karl Marx, a man who hated humanity and all that we stand for. Marxist ideas are everywhere, in our schools and universities, in Hollywood, in our government and corporations, and certainly in our media, and you will recognize them by the insanity, hatred, division, and confusion they always create in an unsuspecting population. Today's interview is a good one, maybe my favorite of the season. We cover exactly what is happening in our government-run schools, and should parents of young children pull them out for an alternate way of educating them? What's going on with all this transgenderism? What is behind it all? Could it all be a Marxist-induced mass psychosis? How can we know? And how do we navigate all this and keep our sanity? We also cover why the left is so triggered by President Trump. Hint, he's an unapologetically strong male figure, and this triggers women and weak men alike. Strong individuals, both men and women, tend to recognize and appreciate President Trump's strong leadership. It's not that he's without flaws, that's not what we're saying, only that his clarity and strength, masculinity, and love of this country is what is needed in this nation right now. In my opinion, there is no second best. Come sit around the fire with a guest who really embodies truth and clarity right now. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Dr. Mark McDonald. Mark is trained in both adult and child and adolescent psychiatry at UCLA. He now works primarily with children in private practice in Los Angeles. His opinions on topics such as the need to reopen America's schools and the pandemic of fear in the United States today have been widely published in local and national news, including the Wall Street Journal and the Federalist. He is the author of both United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis, and Freedom from Fear, a 12-step guide to individual and national recovery. Dr. McDonald also publishes a podcast with Dr. Jeff Bark called Informed Dissent. Here is my interview with Dr. Mark McDonald. All right, I am here with Dr. Mark McDonald, MD and psychiatrist, author Mark McDonald, thought leader and truther. Mark, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Tony, for having me.
Yeah, it's so great. You know, I first came across your work. I saw that you had an episode or a post that was titled "Take Your Kids Out of School Now," and of course, I couldn't help but clicking on it. And I'm just so much in alignment. I've been an outspoken critic of what's going on in schools right now. My father was in education. He's mortified what's going on about 10 different levels. But I guess my first question too is what, you know, why should parents consider taking their kids out of public schools right now?
Because public school, I would call them government schools, are wrecking America's children. I'm a child psychiatrist, and I have not until recently ever recommended parents take their children out of school. And now I say it unequivocally, unless you happen to be in one of those exceptional situations where you have a charter school or a magnet school or a really good private school where the teachers are in alignment with reasonable, traditional, tried and true values and are not beholden to special interests like the teachers' unions or radical political agendas, your children are better off in a homeschool. They're better off with you in the community, period. I feel so strongly about that, not just because of what I see in my practice, but also what I see around the country when I travel, when I speak. when I interview parents, this is a national problem. It is not just restricted to LAUSD, Los Angeles Unified School District, where I am the second largest school district in the country after one in New York, with 600,000 children in K through 12. It is a problem throughout all of urban America and to a large extent in rural America as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's not just one reason. If it was one reason, you know, you could maybe figure out a workaround, but it's like, intellectually, like we took my son out of public school. He's 17 now. And we took him out of school after the pandemic. And we put him in a private school. And you know, I was noticing, forget the radical trans and the hate America Marxist stuff that has been seeped in the schools. The intellectual development is not there. Like, I was watching his reading and his math were flatlined for years. And I was like, what's going on with this? And we took him out of school and his writing and his math got better over the years in the private school because he was back to reading books. It was back to reading like what you and I would maybe expect, like To Kill a Mockingbird and The Hobbit and Hemingway. And he had to do book reports. And I talked to my friend who had a son still in public school. I'm like, are they doing, you know, and I had to kind of be light a little bit around all the woke stuff because of who he is, you know? So, but I was like, well, are they doing book reports? Is he writing? And he goes, they do one book report, but it could be on a graphic novel or a comic book. And I'm like, does that not concern you? And he goes, eh. And I'm like, it concerns me because it seems like they're dumbing the kids down. Yeah. So, and then all the radical stuff, you know, the sex ed, all the trans stuff, all the pronouns. It's just so cringy right now that I can't imagine a young, you know, parents of a young person thinking that that's a great place to have their developing young person. Do you?
Well, I think that it's all tied together. You said there's a lot of reasons, and I agree with you. What I try to do in my writing and speaking, and I also do this with my patients on an individual level when I work with them, is to try to find a linkage between all these seemingly disparate causes. And I think I know what it is. In education, as it is in other aspects of our culture right now, the underpinning, the linkage between all the causes of poor education is or lies with a reinvention, a redefining of what the purpose and function of education is without it being explicitly stated. They will tell you, the teachers' unions, the politicians, that the goal is to get children educated. But if you ask them what their parameters are for defining education, it's no longer test scores. It's no longer literacy, calculus, ability, and the social and personal growth and development of the child. It is now to achieve a diverse and equity-based culture within the school and to reinforce that value, those values in the curriculum itself, which has absolutely nothing to do with education. It's 100% political indoctrination, specifically Marxist indoctrination. Yeah. So to put it bluntly, our school system is no longer an educational environment. It is an indoctrination camp for contemporary Marxism. That is why we are suffering from this problem. And you can see it if you understand it and conceptualize it this way, reflected in every area of our culture, including higher education, including hiring at private and public companies, including our media, including our sports teams, which is where the trans stuff comes in, including the entire online community and social media. Basically, every aspect of our lives that matters has been taken over by contemporary Marxist ideology using fancy, seemingly benign language like inclusivity, equity, inclusion, social justice. And that's what the children are being fed right now. And I'm only right now focusing on the indoctrination aspect and the thought injection. We're also, as a nation, suffering from the takeover of the children's bodies as well. Just today, there has been a lawsuit filed by Liberty Justice Center, which represented me in a federal lawsuit last year against the medical board and the Attorney General of California, Ron Bonta, for the medical misinformation bill that they were trying to shove down our throats. Liberty Justice Center just filed a lawsuit against California Governor Gavin Newsom, who signed 2 days ago AB, I think it's 1995, Assembly Bill 1995, which prohibits all teachers in the state of California from releasing any information about their pupils to those pupils' parents regarding gender identity. So we're not just talking about educational indoctrination, we're talking about medical theft of the child's body, the destruction and elimination of parental rights, which I believe should be sacrosanct in this country, barring some excessive physical abuse and immediate harm and risk to the child's physical safety and well-being. So if a child goes to school, if Eddie goes to school and says, I want to be Edwina today, and the teacher tells the parent, that teacher can be sanctioned. And so now you have to worry not just about your child turning out stupid or turning out indoctrinated. You have to actually worry about your child turning out infertile, turning out mutilated, turning out castrated. So when I say take your kids out of school, I'm not just saying this because I'm a conservative, because I believe in certain civic duties and patriotism, which I do. I'm saying it because your child's actual physical safety is at risk, not from the other students, not from knives and guns, which it is in many schools, but from actual teachers, educators, therapists, principals who do not care at all about your child's well-being.
That's crazy. I mean, it's such a wake-up call. It's such a cold water in the face, but it's so true, you know. And I think parents have been a little flat-footed on the left. I'll say, I live in Seattle, so I live in a very a liberal area, and I'll say that no judgment, because I know these parents care about their kids, but I think it's blindsided them. I think there was blabbermouths like my wife and I, who are conservatives, patriots, and we were like, hell no, you know. But I think it has surprised them at how many people that are going on to podcasts and doing this really great writing on this topic. I think it caught them a little off guard. I think they thought, you know, between the virtue signaling of COVID and just the compliance, and there's this kind of, you know, we're all just doing the best we can, this compliant. Like you said, there's language that makes it seem like, oh, we should go. It's diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, we all want that, don't we? It's so deviant and so devious, I'll say devious, that it's hidden behind language that seems like it doesn't necessarily ring any alarm bells at first glance or second glance, right? You have to really kind of take a look and say, wait a minute, what is really going on here? What is going on with these programs? You had written a great book or authored a great book called United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. What had you write this book? What is exactly, from a psychiatrist's point of view, what is mass delusional psychosis? How is it defined, and what are the signs? And are we still seeing it? Do we still have a portion of the population that still is experiencing it?
We are. America did fell victim to a mass delusional psychosis in 2020, when everyone in the country, and I say everyone, obviously there are exceptions, but largely speaking, Americans all went crazy at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they began acting irrationally against all common sense, against all historical knowledge, against all reasonableness, meaning they agreed to shut down their schools and keep their kids at home. They agreed to put masks on their two-year-olds. Mm-hmm. They agreed to start working from home 24/7. They agreed to spraying abrasive chemicals on their hands 17 times a day to reduce the risk of catching a cold. They agreed to walk in a circular clockwise direction following arrows painted on the floor at Trader Joe's.
Yeah, they did. It's so crazy, man.
which photographs of which will remain in posterity as an example of the idiocy the lunacy, the foolishness. When I say foolishness, what I mean is lacking in wisdom. I don't mean lacking in intelligence. These are smart people. Most people that shop at Trader Joe's are very well educated, but they're fools. They were fools. They lacked in wisdom. And also they were pussies because they didn't show courage. They only showed cowardice. So you had two groups of people. You had the crazies and you had the compliant.
Yeah.
And it was hard to tell which, you know, from which, unless you spoke to them for a long time. But I said that everyone went crazy. There was a mass delusional psychosis because everybody was acting so irrationally and so foolishly all at the same time, something that I had never seen in modern history before. And they continued to do this for several years. And even now they continue to do it. Even now, when I go to the gym, I see about 25% of the people in the gym are wearing masks. They're still doing it outside. They're still doing it on bicycles. They're still looking for hand sanitizer. When they go to Trader Joe's, like the woman yesterday who had a mask on, interrupted me while I was talking to one of the workers, where's the hand sanitizer? Why the hell are you putting alcohol on your hands? It cracks your skin. It makes them more prone to infection. They're still putting on masks when they walk into the store, taking them off when they leave the store. Now, the mask is an obvious symbol of this insanity, but it's only a symptom. It's not the cause. It's the expression of it. People are still acting incredibly foolishly. As an example, there was a interview that just took place a couple days ago somewhere in Southern California on a beach. It might have been Santa Monica or Huntington Beach. Well, that probably wasn't Huntington. That's in Orange County. It was somewhere in the leftist side of the beach community.
Yep.
A man interviewed at least a dozen people, all ages, ethnicities, sexes. When I say all, I mean both sexes. And he, you know, he parsed this because I'm sure he interviewed people who didn't say this, but he had about a dozen people who all said a variation of the following. After the assassination attempt of Donald Trump, I'm convinced that fill in the blank, A, B, C, D, or E, A, the assassination attempt was staged. B, the blood wasn't real. It was a red dye that he wiped across his ear to stage the bullet. The bullet, the bullet did go past his ear, but it was planned that he would turn his head and it would come within 2 millimeters of his head. They all staged it. And the guy that died was a sacrificial lamb for the cause. I went on and on with these kind of, and I'm not talking about political difference opinions. I'm talking about actual lunacy, actual foolishness. These, of course, are the same people who got a bunch of injections, boosters, and were wearing masks and kept their kids home from school, or probably still working from home. So, we can get rid of all of the symbols and signs of lunacy in our culture, like the masks and the stupid, you know, directional markers on the floor and the spots every 6 feet at the bank, the plexiglass shields that stand up on the counter at the DMV that you can lean over and talk around, you know, all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change the underlying problem, which is that we have, in my opinion, we have a nation of people who are unable to think critically. They are incredibly compliant. And they are willing to accept just about anything that's told to them from a position of authority, whether it's political, media, or corporate, even if it doesn't make sense, because they are so narcissistically controlled by their own feelings and their own self-importance. Mm-hmm. And this is why I think the problem is actually a psychological one. We don't have just a political divide. We have a divide in this country today, because you asked me earlier, Tony, is this still happening? And I would say today it's happening in the following way. Our divide is now not between right and left, liberal, conservative, rich and poor, black and white, gay and straight. That's not the divide at all. The divide is between those who are able to see and live in reality and those who are not. Mm-hmm. It is that simple to me.
Wow.
After this assassination attempt against Trump, it was evidently clear to me that many Americans cannot, will not see reality. And many Americans can and will. And that is where the dividing line is. And if we don't work on fixing that psychological problem, we can never come together as a unified, but let's say disagreed upon issues nation, which is what we used to be up until a few years ago.
Right. Wow. You're really blowing my mind with that. That is a new way of framing it. It just makes all the sense in the world. You know, you had mentioned pussies, and one of the things that I was so kind of pissed off. I mean, I was surprised that the men, and we're going to talk about masculinity here in a second, but I was surprised. I thought in Seattle there was going to be more balls from the men standing up. I saw women, my wife out, you know, no mask, and like, I'm not doing that. And the guys were just like bent over, like, just, no, we just got to go along with it. I was so disappointed in that. And the other group was the medical doctors. Nobody was like raising. I know they noticed some things that they were like, this doesn't make any sense. And, but I just think a lot of those MDs, maybe they're, it's the golden handcuffs, you know, they've got the big house on Mercer Island and they're like, maybe they've only got 10 more years of work and they're on the gravy train and they're like, I don't want to stand out. But I was like, I mean, you did. And a few other really kind of famous, you know, doctors that have been prominently, you know, pointing to the truth. But in my community, I didn't, they all were just like, we just got to go along. We got to trust the science. I'm like, what is this trust the science? Trust Tony Fauci, Bill Gates? Who is the science in your viewpoint? And I was really blown away by the level of like obedience to authority by the MDs who could have stood up and said, wait, let's slow down about what we're doing with all this stuff. And let's slow down on the rollout of are these vaccines tested? Like, that would have been a real scientific question to ask for any of the doctors that were around me, but I didn't hear any. They were just like, shut up. And this is a good thing. It was kind of the subtext, right?
Well, what you're pointing out answers a question that I've been struggling with. And many people have asked me for a number of years now since 2020, which is, did the events of 2020, the mass delusional psychosis that I wrote about in my book, United States of Fear, was that provoked like an infection, like an asteroid hitting the Earth, killing the dinosaurs? Or was that a revealing of a pre-existing condition?
Interesting. Yeah.
And I believe that it's actually the latter. I believe that we have been living a lie as a nation for a number of years, maybe a few decades, but it was not revealed until 2020 in full force. There were glimpses of it. We were seeing it happening, kind of like termites eating away at the wood of a foundation. You can kind of hear them working. You can see the dust. You can feel a little bit of cracks here and there. There might be a little splinter, but you're still walking around, moving your furniture, having a party. There's not anything really obvious. And then one day, the floor falls out.
Yeah.
And you say, wow, that was a catastrophic event. Well, that didn't happen overnight. That's the end result of years of weakening of the foundation, of a sort of an immune system collapse of the body, if you were thinking of it as a person psychologically. And I think we've been in that state of decline for a number of years, probably since the mid to late 60s, and certainly catastrophically accelerated after Obama's second term. And then tripled and quadrupled down, obviously, under Biden. But I don't think Biden caused much of what's happening now. I think he just accelerated what was already started. And that includes, as you pointed out, a very important universal problem now in the West. And it's on full display here in the United States, as well as all Anglophone nations and most of Western Europe, which is the loss of masculinity and the attack on masculinity, the toxification of the idea of masculinity. And that's been going on now for a number of years, where men and masculinity are not valued. They are shunned. They are belittled. They are negated. They are derided. And in the converse, femininity is now elevated as a primary virtue, as if femininity is in and of itself good and can do no wrong.
Yep. What concerns you about the younger generation of men that are coming up? Let's say, you know, I have a 17-year-old, you know, that generation, and you know, what would you say to them, or what would you like to see happen to the narrative for them, I guess, is one way to ask you.
What they should be doing, what we should be teaching them, and what society in general should be reinforcing is men to stand up, show their balls, and give orders, take control.
Yep.
Demand what they want and take it. And I'm not saying take it violently and take it by breaking laws, but I mean going after what it is in a man's quest, like a warrior, that turns him into an adult male. And this goes back psychoanalytically to Freud, the idea of the libido. And the libido is not just a genital sex drive. It's not just the lust to have sex with a woman. It's also present in women too. Libido is a is a drive. Libidinal lust is a drive for productivity. It's a drive for doing, for creating. And that exists in all human beings and exists in a specific way in men, which is to go out in the world, seize control, take risks, and bring stuff back to the home. That's the purpose of the man. The man is to express, in Jack Donovan's words, who wrote the book, The Way of Men, it's to express physical strength, courage, to some degree, virtue, culturally derived virtue, because it is sort of culturally driven, and honor, which is protecting what matters to you. If you can't express those four core values, then you are not a man. You are not masculine. And the children, the teenagers today, don't express physical strength. Recently, physical strength was even called right wing in a lot of media circles.
Yep.
They don't express courage, meaning they're not willing to go out and take risks. They delegate all of the risk taking to others, who they then deride as being abusive, like the police, for example.
Yep.
They don't express or show honor. They don't protect what's theirs. They just let go. They're told to let go. They're said, if you ever get robbed, just give everything up. Just walk away. Don't fight back. Just be a pussy. And they don't express virtue, meaning they don't exemplify the defense of the values of the society in which they live, not just what they own themselves, but to defend the rights of others. Mm-hmm. To stand up for a grandma who's being attacked by thugs in the subway. That's an expression of virtue. They won't do that. They're told not to. And this is a big problem because it's not attractive to women. Women, despite what they say, because they're just sort of rehashing what they hear all the time on the news and in the feminist circles, they don't want men like that.
Nope.
Because biologically speaking, women need physically strong men to take risks, to honor them, to protect them, and to uphold the virtues of the community. So they actually want that. And it's interesting. I just took a woman who's a cousin of a friend of mine who was visiting here from Poland, who I call like a liberal Democrat, down to Orange County. I was going to go get some food. I had to stop at a gun shop to do some repairs on my concealed carry gun. And I dropped her off there. I mean, we're waiting in the waiting room until this guy comes out and finishes with another customer. And she's not interested in guns at all, but she's curious. So she walks in and she looks around, and then she wants to talk to the owner. Then she wants to hold one of the guns, and she gets really turned on by it. And as she leaves, she's got this glow in her eyes. And she says, wow, I felt so powerful in the presence of power in that store. And that man with the tattoos and the former military gear in his 30s really fit.
Yep.
I'm so attracted to him. And she has nothing in common with him politically, nothing in common with him in terms of her so-called core values. But she as a woman was just, I could just see her femininity just explode, just blossom in the presence of this man. So I think women, in order to be feminine, in order to fulfill their feminine nature, they need to be in the presence of masculinity, like a flower needs to be in the presence of water in order to grow and blossom, not desiccated. So if men can't get a hold of that, find that masculinity and express it, they will then not allow, by that absence, women to flourish and to grow as women. And so the two sexes will not find one another. And if they do, then the women will suddenly come a bloom, and they will feel like women, and they'll feel powerful and strong in their feminine role, and both sexes will flourish. They'll get together, they'll start to get married and have children again, and they won't turn out bitter and angry women or emasculated, fat, lazy eunuchs living in their parents' basement type of men. This is not that complicated, but it's incredibly provocative and confrontational, shouldn't be, when I say these things, because it goes against exactly what everyone, your son included, is being told in society and by media and by politicians. Everything they're being told is a lie.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Mark, I was down, the first time I went down to America, Charlie Kirk, his America Fest, AmFest in Phoenix, my wife and I and my son went down there last December just to get a shot in the arm, because we live in this blue area and we just feel kind of overrun by the Marxists here. And we went down there, and one of the things that just stood out to me, there was all these young people, you know, young men, young women, high school, college age, you know, and the speakers are up there, you know, Benny Johnson's telling them, hey, you know, this crowd, look at all these young people, get yourself a wife, a husband, go have lots of kids. You know, I mean, the message was so different from what I hear in and around where I'm at. You know what I mean? And it was really refreshing. It was really refreshing to see these young conservatives, looking to start careers and families, and, Yeah, it was just really, it was really uplifting to me to see that, because I'm like, wait a minute, you know, the media is trying to make it sound like we don't have a future generation coming out that's not going to be LGBTQ or, you know, doesn't want to have children or, you know, any of that. And then I go there and I'm like, no, 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 wait a minute. There's a lot to be optimistic about. You gotta know which communities to look around in. And I can forget that being in this really, really woke area where I'm like, oh man, what's going to happen with the young people here? What's going on with LGBTQ plus? Like, what is your take on that? You know, I used to be a liberal way back in the day, and I was for a long time. In other words, I was like, I don't really care. Like, if you're gay or you're lesbian, I don't care. Like, you do you, you know, I'm a libertarian, just like, you know, it wasn't until they started trying to groom kids with all the stuff that you and I talked about, you know, when they started to talk all about the pronouns and there's no such thing as men and women. That's when I was like, what are you talking about? This sounds like a mental illness, you know, and, you know, they've kind of taken people's natural tolerance of lifestyle. Like, I'm not condemning of other people's lifestyle. I just don't want you confusing 5, 6, 7, 8, and 10-year-olds about their biology, you know? And yeah. So what's your take on the LGBTQ plus? Is it, you know, is it just another Marxist thing to, you know, groom, you know, a whole tribe that's never going to reproduce, is going to, you know, what's your take on it exactly?
Well, Tony, transgenderism is a mental illness. I've written about that in my blog on dissidentmd.com.
Yeah.
Very frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, without knowing it, I think, used a term that requires a distinction, which is, I used to be a liberal, you said.
Yeah.
Well, this is not a liberal idea. This is a leftist idea.
Right.
The liberals and the conservatives today hold very, very similar views regarding lesbians, gays, and bisexuals. And that view is largely, do what you want.
Yeah.
Now, there might be a distinction between conservatives and liberals on whether we should have government-sanctioned marriage.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, for religious reasons, religious conservatives have a different view about the morality of being gay, lesbian, or bisexual. But that largely doesn't enter the social sphere. That's a private belief.
Right.
So the real distinction now is not between conservative and liberal. It's between everyone who isn't on the left and the left.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of transgenderism has actually nothing to do with gay and lesbian and bisexual rights, because gays, lesbians, and bisexuals, they argue and they hold the belief that sexual orientation has nothing to do with gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
They fought for the right to have sexual orientation different from their biological sex, meaning women who are biologically women happen to be sexually attracted to women. They never argued that biological sex itself is mutable or that gender identity is mutable.
Right.
The transgenders do. They've piggybacked on to lesbian, gays, and bisexuals like parasites, like termites, like fleas on the back of a dog, and sucking the life and the blood out of the lesbian, gays, and transgenders. We interviewed a woman on our podcast, Informed Dissent, recently, who is the president of the American chapter of the Gay Lesbian Bisexual Alliance. Now, notice I didn't say Gay Lesbian Bisexual Transgender Alliance.
Right.
Josh Grover said to us, I, as a lesbian, am appalled at the takeover of our community by the trans movement. Every value we hold, they oppose. We oppose child grooming. We oppose genital mutilation. We oppose chemical castration using hormones. We oppose, in our lesbian dating apps, we oppose men with wigs and skirts posing as lesbians who are transgendered in order to hit on us, and then be told that if we don't want to go out with them, that we're transphobic and get booted off the app,
yep.
Which is what's happening right now. That's what's happening. We oppose the intrusion into our private lives by mentally ill, deranged, sick, and largely evil activists who are taking advantage of young girls and raiding the locker rooms, the medals, the business offices, the DMV and passport photo lines by pushing not just ideology, but actual mental illness onto the rest of society. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do believe that the transgender movement is one more facet of the expression of the Marxist takeover of the US. What I mean by Marxist takeover is I mean a denial of reality, a hyper narcissistic focus that refuses to accept basic laws of economics, physics, and biology, and which insists that not the individual or the family or the community is the rule maker, but rather an authority figure that has usurped power from those who were elected, who have the will of the people and hold on to it, and that that authority figure can despotically and fascistically order everyone else to do its bidding. That is the transgender movement. That is the transgender activist community. It is one of the smallest, yet the most powerful and the most destructive ideologically driven movements that I have ever seen in human history. And if we don't stop it, it's not only going to destroy our youth population, it's going to run rampant like a cancer that's mm-hmm. invading society throughout every single social, political, and legal structure that we have. We are going to lose our nation if we don't eradicate this. This is not a political difference. This is a sickness that has been weaponized financially and politically and socially, and it's taken over every one of our institutions, our military, our school system, our hospitals, our financial systems, our courts. Everything mm-hmm. is acting beholden to this trans movement. And it is not bound on anything reasonable, rational, biologically true, financially viable. It is purely destructive. It needs to be shut down. It needs to be called out. People need to stand up and remove it, just like they would remove the KKK or Nazism. It is at mm-hmm. that level of destructive potential in this country. And anyone who denies that is either a fool or a liar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, man. Oh man. What a wake up call. What has you, I mean, we're talking about a lot of what we're seeing that is at our doorstep, you know, the enemy inside the gate, you know, whether that be, you know, it's Marxists in the schools and in every institution, globalism, you know, with its agenda, it seems like those are overlapping. It seems like that they serve one another. You know, you have the media blaring out all their nonsense, trying to keep people in the dark. What has you optimistic right now? You know, where is this going? We seem to be, it's funny, Mark, because I've been talking in many, many episodes, you know, that one of the things is a lot of people don't realize that we're in a very unconventional war. All the things you talked about right now, it's an unconventional fifth generation warfare. General Flynn has talked about it. It's been written about over and over again. But some people just don't acknowledge. It's like people feel fried. People, even on the right side, even people that are like aware of what's going on, you know, are like, God dang, it's exhausting right now. Just, I feel like we're battling these demonic forces that have infiltrated all the things, you know, they've pushed into our children's lives. It seemed like 10, 15 years ago, it was over there a little bit more. Now it's in our faces, right? And it's waking a lot of people up, which is, I think, a good thing. But I guess, like, you know, what do you do to prepare for what's coming? I think the next 6 months, there's going to be a lot of interesting things happen. I think we're going to know where we're at a little bit more with the chessboard, so to speak. And you know, things could move quickly in we the people's favor, but that's not a guaranteed thing. So I guess my question is, like, what, you know, where are we at? Are you optimistic? What has you optimistic? We've talked about a lot of the threats that we see and the concerns that we have and the challenges that we face, but what has you that's kind of like, no, I know we're in a war, but we're going to win this war, damn it.
Tony, I was a lot more pessimistic 6 months ago than I am now. And I think for the reasons you just described, which is exhaustion, I felt like I've been in defense mode for 4 years, ever since 2020, when the country was locked down inhumanely and to the great everlasting regret of the majority of American citizenry. We have not yet recovered from that at all. And you could even argue that in many ways we're doing worse now than we did in 2020. Certainly economically, we're far worse off. Our dollar has lost at least 40% of its value, its purchasing power.
Yep.
And most people now live on credit. We have a bubble in the real estate market, which is going to explode. We're already in, I should say, we have been in an economic recession now for 3 years. We just simply haven't had it revealed yet fully.
Yep.
And in a lot of other ways, we're worse off. But what I've seen recently in the last 3-4 months gives me some heart. I'll give you a couple of examples. One occurred in France about 30 days ago, where over 90% of the provinces in France voted for the Marie Le Pen party, the conservative party, mm-hmm. against the left-wing party, which is open border, DEI, pro-immigrant, illegal immigrant, anti-language, anti-French culture. That's unbelievable unification for the French, who are famously at odds at each other's throats all the time.
Yep.
That really shocked me. Over 90% support for that party and the positions of essentially Meloni out of Italy's running platform, which was three words, church, mother, family. Mm-hmm. That's basically what she ran on. And that's what the French want, except they would do it in the more the French patriotic way, but same idea.
Yep.
The second came out of England about 6-9 months ago, maybe a year ago now, where the government actually shut down the Tavistock Clinic, which was one of the largest abusers of children in England at the time.
That was like a transitioning place, right? Place where
they were cutting off penises and, yep. and folding vaginas and sticking boys and girls with hormone blockers and cross-dressing them. And hundreds of these victims, children, as they grew older, and even before they turned 18, they filed lawsuits against the Tavistock Clinic, saying that they had been taken advantage of by the medical establishment and their lives had been destroyed. And the government agreed and they shut the thing down. And then this reverberated across most of Western Europe. I don't know any nation now in Western Europe that supports this transgender assault on children at all. And they're not even pushing on adults anymore. It's basically over in Europe. Those are two very important examples in the continent and in England. And then here domestically, what I've been emboldened by in the last just month or two has been what I think is a stark, rapid ripping off of the Band-Aid revelation of the utter incompetence of the current nursing home patient in chief, who is known as the President of the United States, who is not just flawed, not just a bad human being, but actually mentally incompetent and incontinent.
Yes. Exactly.
He is the laughingstock of the world, leading the most powerful nation in the world. And now not just conservatives, but also loyal Democrats know it, and they don't even argue against it anymore.
Was that
shocking. That happened after the debate.
Yeah, I know. Was it a little surreal to you after the debate? I was hearing all these liberals going, "Oh my God, he's got dementia. He's not fit for office." They were all saying that. I'm thinking to myself, we've known conservatives, we've known this for years. Like, you should have seen the videos we've seen, you know, about this. Like, I was like, I wasn't even triggered, but to your point, I was like noticing like the left got really like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it." I'm like, "You got to be kidding me, right? You, what do you mean you can't believe it?" You know, but it was, there you go. It was like, you and I probably get a lot different inputs than they do on the left. And so for them, it was, you know, holy shit, our guy is not fit for office.
Well, this is important.
It's very important.
But they didn't. And the fact that they know it and they acknowledge it means that they're changing their mind. And we need them to change their mind because we on the conservative side don't occupy the majority of the population. We're in the minority. Yep. We need the 60% of the Democrat liberals. Forget the left. They're useless.
Yep.
They actually are only a force for destruction, but they are less than 20% of the population, probably fewer than 10% if you take it on a national level. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to even consider them in the calculus.
Right.
But when they use the other 60% of the foolish people, not evil, but foolish, I think Democrats are largely foolish people, the Democrat voters, I mean, when they take advantage of that 60% and weaponize them to do their bidding, that's when the the Borg becomes dangerous. Mm-hmm. So I was really heartened to see that that other 60% of the population woke up and realized we've got a serious problem here and we need to do something about it.
Yep.
That was a big, big milestone in my view. And also most recently on the other side, the unification of the fractured conservative movement really speeded up mm-hmm. after the assassination attempt against Donald Trump. And it even pulled a lot of wobbly Democrats over to the, you call it the conservative side, or probably the Republican side, really, mm-hmm. which is also very heartening because the conservatives need to be unified in order to stand as a bulwark against the onslaught of the Democrats that are driven by the left, because the Democrat Party has now been taken over by the left. And for these two reasons, I'm really optimistic that there might be a possibility of a reform within the Democrat Party to become liberal again rather than left. Yeah. And for the Conservative Party to become a real populist melting pot, like is an example of the Black woman who stood up and spoke at the Republican National Convention a few days ago, whose son was an Army vet, I believe, or Marine vet. And he was murdered in New York City by four, he's Black, he was murdered by four, I believe, Black men with knives who were largely just let go by Alvin Bragg, who's the evil district attorney in New York City. Mm-hmm. And she stood up and she said, my son would have given his life overseas, but he gave his life involuntarily here in the U.S. And the criminals that took his life have been let out back onto the street by a Black district attorney yep. here in New York City. And then she said in very loud chant, she said, let's make America safe again. Well, that reverberates with everyone. Make yep. America safe again. Even if you don't like the word great, I love the word great, but safety is true for everybody. Yep. Even if you don't want a great America, you certainly want a safe America. So I think that's going to pull over a lot of people. And I think that if we can catalyze that transition, and we haven't catalyzed it for 4 years, we've just been in kind of a slow stasis / decline for 4 years, which is a horrible place to be. I hate being in the middle of nothing, where we're not succeeding, we're not failing, we're just kind of slowly strangling. If we can go to the point where we are in a do or die situation, I think we are at that point now, where we've got maybe 4 to 6 months left of our life support before we got to pull the plug, mm-hmm. or we've got to slap the patient awake. We're either going to die or we're going to wake up. And I would rather the nation collapse than stay on life support anymore, because we need to do something. The only way for us to win, to get back, is to really push ourselves over the edge. And we're really very, very close to that. We are probably tipping over right now. And for that reason, I think that there's hope to finally, like I said, catalyze not just a slow transition, but a radical return to what we were before as a great nation. And if we do that, if we succeed, if we can get Donald Trump in office and get a conservative Republican revolution politically, get people to start thinking about family, civic organizations, churches again, public safety, education, just get that going at a grassroots level, the top and the bottom together like a sandwich, that is going to spark such a re-energization of the country that it will spill over to the rest of the world. It'll capture Europe. It'll tamp down Iranian aggression, Chinese aggression, Hamas, all the stuff that happened as soon as Trump left office and Biden took over. That will all be contained and perhaps reversed. And then the U.S. will start to become a beacon of strength, power, courage, masculinity again, yeah, rather absolutely. Than an effeminate, pussified nation under Joe Biden, which is what we've been for 4 years. So I am optimistic. I feel better now than I did 6 months ago. I'm not depressed. I'm not anxious. I'm anxious in an anticipatory kind of way. And I'm excited because I like the battle. I like the fight. Yeah. I would rather we go into battle and win or lose, come out, instead of sitting on the sideline and just watching our blood leak away. That is the worst possible state to be in. And that's what we've been in for 4 years. I'm sick of it. Most America's sick of it. And I think everybody's ready to get up in the ring and start fighting it out.
I love it, Mark. I love it. I love it. You know, that's funny about the Trump thing. I think of my former friends on that are liberals and their Trump derangement syndrome. If they really knew the truth about who he is and what he's fighting for, they would be so embarrassed by some of the things that they have said about him and assumptions that they've made. They have missed so many things about who he is. I'm not saying he's a perfect man or you know, whatever, perfect Christian or whatever people say, right? He's none of that. But man, he is such a badass. He's such a fucking warrior, and he loves this country. Man, he loves everything we're talking about. He would be nodding his head and like, that's why I'm fighting, you know? And I think a lot of my friends that I've known for, you know, 25 years that are liberals, I think they would be pretty sheepish if they really knew more about, have an honest, like, assessment with all the inputs you and I know. I think they'd be like, son of a bitch, I am embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that I tweeted that. I'm embarrassed that I've said this over and over about this man that was fighting for me. You know what I mean? Like, you dumbasses, he represents we the people. Can't you see that? But they can't. They're completely delusional about it.
You know why they can't see it? You know what the TDS toxin is that feeds it?
What is it?
It is a lens of feminization.
Oh, yeah.
People with TDS are feminized.
Yep.
So the men that you're describing, they have swallowed this poison of feminization that is linguistic, it is cultural, it is values driven, it is about receptivity, it is about warmth, it was about empathy, it's about forgiveness, lack of conflict, pacifism. Now, all of those qualities are valuable in certain contexts. Like to say that femininity is bad is absurd. I mean, we have women, we have men, we need femininity. Mm-hmm. But when you see everything through that lens, Biden is an effeminate president. He's weak.
Yep.
He's passive. And he's actually kind of a bitter, nasty old man. But there's a feminized quality about him that is accepted and valued, not just by women, but also by men in this country. And that's why Donald Trump is so hated by women and by men who have been feminized or who have swallowed that toxin of the feminine is the only way to go and is the only road, because he stands in stark contrast to that by expressing blunt, in your face, brash masculinity. And it causes them to lose their minds. They literally cannot think because they are so rabidly opposed to any expression of masculinity. Now, the underlying values they would agree with, mm-hmm. but they can't see the values because he is a manly man. And they are against that.
He's triggering to them.
He's triggering. That's a great word. Donald Trump is a trigger because of his masculine energy to those who oppose masculinity. And that would be hyper-feminized, and I say feminized like as in feminist movement, feminized women and feminized men. Mm-hmm. If you look, and they're weak. These are weak people. Mm-hmm. If you look at strong human beings, and I mean strong men and strong women, mm-hmm. they largely support Donald Trump. If often even revere him. I have not met a strong woman who is opposed to Donald Trump. Strong women love him because they recognize that his masculinity comports with their strength. It's only weak people that feel threatened by him.
Yeah, good point. Man, oh man, you're getting me to rethink so many things. Well, Mark, it's been so great to chat with you. I feel like we could just sit around and do this all day. Where can people find you, your work? You've got a pod. Are you doing that every week? Is that like every couple of weeks? How often are you doing that? Where can people find you? Where do you want to point people to?
There's only two things to remember. One is my website, DissidentMD. And from DissidentMD.com, you can find what I'm writing, which I post on that website. You can also find my LinkedIn page, which is DissidentMD as well. I'm sorry, not LinkedIn. I was taken off LinkedIn for saying that people need to get out of public schools. My Instagram page, which is DissidentMD. And the second thing to remember is that I have a podcast, which is Informed Dissent, mm-hmm. with Dr. Jeff Barkey, the intersection of healthcare and politics. You can also get the link to it from my website. But if you go to a podcasting station or on your phone, like Apple Podcasts, and just type in Informed Dissent, you'll get it. We actually publish 5 episodes per month of interviews with interesting people in healthcare, politics, media, MMA, psychology, psychiatry, sex therapy. We cover anything that's provocative and interesting in the intersection of healthcare and politics on Informed Dissent. And you can also find my books on my website, Dissident MD, as well, which are, as you mentioned earlier, United States of Fear, How America Fell Victim to a Mass Delusional Psychosis. And then my follow-up book to that, which is A Way Out, called Freedom from Fear, a 12-step guide to a personal and a national recovery.
Beautiful. Mark, thanks so much for making time today. Really appreciate you and everything you're doing, and definitely going to be giving those a listen. Just love what you're about. So thanks again for coming on today.
Thank you, Tony. Good to have you on the talk with you. Really enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I hope to have Dr. Mark on back soon to talk about some other important issues. I love how Mark pointed out that liberals and conservatives actually hold very similar views on many important issues, and that it's the radical left and their activists that are opposing all of us. Interesting dynamic, isn't it? You can find his excellent content on www.dissidentmd.com, and his podcast with Dr. Jeff Bark is Informed Dissent. Thank you for your ears, base campers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.